This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Miramar Six Nations podcast, ahead of the final round of matches. Will unbeaten Wales close the deal, or can Ireland spoil the Grand Slam party and hand England the title for 2019? My name is Alex Spink, and joining me to discuss the matches between Wales and Ireland, England and Scotland, and Italy and France is Paul Grayson, World Cup winner and Daily Mirror columnist, Andy Howell, rugby correspondent for Wales Online, Michael Scully, our man at the Irish Mirror, and Neil Squires, correspondent for the Daily Express. Only one place to start, and that is at the Principality Stadium, scene of Wales' come-from-behind win over England, which has put Warren Gatland's team within 80 minutes of a slam in his final championship match as head coach. Paul Grayson, Grand Slam winner in 2003, is with me. So, Grace, it comes down to Super Saturday, as everyone, I'm sure, hoped that it would. Wales against Ireland, Wales with the destiny of the Grand Slam in their hands, or mess it up and open the door to England, who could then snatch the title by beating Scotland. A dream scenario for fans of Wales, or I guess a complete nightmare if it goes wrong.
Yeah, I mean, look, Gatland said at the beginning of the tournament, he said if we get away in the first couple of games, we fancy ourselves to win it. And to win a Grand Slam, and he's a canny operator, isn't he? He's not often wrong, and they've managed to get most of the way there without really cracking any parts, bar a fantastic performance against England. So you know they've still got a big game in them, because they did enough to get by Scotland and put themselves in a position to win it. And I guess for them, it's write your little bit of history. Or pretty much hand the championship to England, which will only be added motivation for them. And from England's point of view, yeah, they're in this position because they let Wales off the hook when, with half an hour to go, they pretty much got them where they wanted and fell short. So it is really interesting. Then to throw Ireland into the mix, who just haven't turned up at all, really, by their own standards. In this tournament, and I do feel at the back of my mind that they've still got one massive performance, whether the motivation's there because they know they're realistically not going to win the championship, but they'll certainly want to finish with a confidence boosting performance, and them at their very best, they're a tough proposition.
Wales unbeaten, do they deserve the title, or do you only make that judgment when you played all the games?
Yeah, it's a funny one, really, isn't it? If you win every match you play in, then of course you deserve it. And it doesn't. There is no. When you look back in the rearview mirror at the glory days, you don't forensically go through each game and say, "God, we were lucky here or we were lucky there." I mean, they were abject in the first half in Paris, got themselves in a right mess, and then fixed it, changed their squad completely, tried to replicate a bit of World Cup stuff. Second game. So you could almost say that that's a deliberate kick in your own shins to prepare yourself for something further down the line. So an average performance there is sort of no surprise because of what they did to their team. So some they've contributed to themselves, but ultimately their big game to give themselves a chance was England. England at home, and they weathered the storm, and then really last half an hour, certainly last 20 minutes, they managed to stay the course where England fell away.
Ireland have been tipped by a lot of pundits to spoil the party this weekend. A lot of people think that they showed enough against France last week in their own game, their own attacking game, to show that they're kind of getting their timing and their rhythm back. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I picked Ireland to win the championship.
You did indeed.
With no Grand Slam.
Yeah.
That isn't going to be the case unless Scotland write a little bit of history at Twickenham and Ireland win in Wales. And actually, I still think that it might end up as England's championship by dint of the fact that Ireland beat Wales in Cardiff, because they were clinical against France, and they got France like a playground bully, really. They were just holding him at arm's length. France was swinging away but achieving nothing, and Ireland had the game pretty much sewn up. I mean, it was 76 minutes before France registered a point. And Ireland just had that clinical edge, and one or two players back in the right positions that changed the dynamic of their team a little bit. So, I mean, I can personally, having backed them, I can see, as I predicted, they would win, but not with the Grand Slam. I had them losing the last game, but winning the first. As it is, they might hand England the title by losing the first game to England, but winning the last one against Wales.
Okay, let's bring in Andy Howe, correspondent for Wales Online. Andy, how well equipped do you think Wales are to meet the challenge posed by Ireland, by an Ireland side that last weekend did look pretty decent, didn't it?
Yeah, but I think, last weekend, man, you've got to look at the French. The French were awful last weekend. If anything, they've regressed this tournament. And I actually thought Ireland just went through a lot of the motions for much of that match. They hardly got out of second gear. And I think that was, you could tell that by how flat the crowd was. Yeah. At the Riva Stadium, they basically didn't have to do a lot to beat the French. I thought Ireland, they were okay up front. I didn't think they put the ball for the hands in the three quarters very well. And I do think that the England beating them earlier than the campaign has knocked their confidence. But they will be a lot better against Wales. There's so much at stake, but Wales will be a lot better than they were against Scotland. So I'm expecting, another titanic struggle, as were the match between Wales and England a couple of weeks ago.
Will it take Wales' best performance of the championship to bring home the Grand Slam?
That's a good question, Alex. I think if they play as well as they did against England, they got every chance of winning this match. Wales-Ireland, they are 50-50 games. Comes down to some, fine margins, which you saw in the England-Ireland game. And you saw, Wales-England, Wales nicked it at the end with that spectacular catch from Josh Adams. He managed to hold on to it, but it could have been a knock-on. So there's not much in it at this level. But, Wales, their destiny's in their own hands. They win it, they win the Grand Slam, they win the title, they lose the match, they probably come third in the championship, because I would imagine England will step in. I think Ireland know, at best, they're only playing for second.
A lot of experts I'm hearing on the airwaves, when asked in one word who's going to win the title, are saying England. And I'm not just talking about former England internationals. A lot of people are looking across these fixtures and saying that they think England's chances are better because the Ireland are a quality team and the pressure's on Wales. That's kind of disrespectful towards this Welsh team, given that you've won 13 on the spin.
Absolutely. I mean, Wales on a record, 13 matches in a row. Their record against Ireland under Gatland is about 50-50. And the match is in Cardiff. So I think, I think there's a lot of people outside Wales almost grasped what Wales have done the last 13 months, gone unbeaten. It's an incredible record.
Yeah.
Wales got really good players who were the equal of the Irish players, and I would say the Welsh three quarters are a lot better than the Irish three quarters. Plus Ireland, I don't think Conor Murray's playing very well. He had that serious neck injury. And it doesn't look like he's relishing the physical combat anymore. So I think he's off form a bit. And I don't think Sexton has quite got the verve that he had last year. In fact, Ireland looked better the weekend when Jack Carty came on from it outside half. He was more pragmatic and played corners, which is probably what they didn't do against England, but what they need to do against Wales, to put pressure on a Welsh liner, which is a bit suspect.
Yeah, I see Dan Levy's back in the Ireland squad for this weekend. But do you know what? I think you're right. I don't think this Wales team has had the credit or the respect it deserves for the run it's been on, what it's achieved. I thought it would have had it after the England game. But even now, I'm surprised that more people aren't saying, with home advantage, with the record they've got, with Gatland in his final Six Nations match, I'm surprised more people aren't siding with Wales going into this game. Presumably down in the Principality, everyone is. Well, we get that, obviously. But I'm surprised away from that, that more observers don't think, actually, this is a pretty decent Wales team.
Yeah, exactly. What it could come down to, mind, is perhaps people outside the Celtic countries and Italy don't see much of the Pro 14, and the Welsh teams haven't made much of an impact on the Champions Cup. So perhaps it's a case of out of sight, out of mind. But yeah, Wales got everything going for it this weekend.
But doesn't that make, Andy, let me interrupt you, doesn't that make the achievement more incredible that a lot of these Welsh players rarely win with their regions? You know, and yet they come together under Gatland and Edwards and Howley, and they become this winning machine. I mean, that makes the achievement more incredible.
Yeah, that shows how special that Gatland and Edwards in particular are as coaches. You know, with the Welsh regions, in fairness, they have got good players. Perhaps they haven't got the strength in depth, but I often wonder how good some of the Welsh regions would be if Gatland and Edwards were coaching them. So, you know, maybe the coaching's a lot better with Wales. The players come into the Wales camp and they made to feel $1 million. The training is really tough, but it tends to be short, sharp sessions. And I think it's different. It's totally different from their regular job, if you like, you know, being with their regions on a weekly basis. Mm. And they enjoy it. And, of course, and they're on 15 grand a game as well for winning. So there's a lot of money at stake. There's £1 million bonus for the Six Nations winners. So there's a lot up for grabs for them.
If Wales get across the line this weekend and win this Grand Slam, how will this Slam compare with Gatland's previous ones?
That's a good question, Alex. 2012, I thought that was a really good Grand Slam because they won away in Ireland and they won in England in 28. They were the surprise package,
yeah,
in one sense, but it was largely the team of Mike Ruddock had moulded and take the Grand Slam in 2005, but had underachieved under his successor, Gareth Jenkins. So I think that was all there for Gatland. It was some really good players. 2012, big achievement. Maybe the biggest achievement of all mine was in when he didn't win the Grand Slam, but when he mugged England for the title in 2013 with a 30-3 victory in Cardiff, because really they'd been hammered in their first game at home against Ireland, but they bounced back and they were magnificent against England at the end of that title. That was one of the greatest Welsh performances I've ever seen, and do you know what, I think the players will be up there to produce the same intensity and physicality this weekend.
When they won the Grand Slam in 2012, it was against, if I remember rightly, France. At the then Millennium Stadium, and Mervyn Davies had died a couple of days previously, hadn't there? And there was a real kind of, there was a lot of emotion in the air as they kind of paid their respects to Mervyn before the game. And I wonder whether there will be the same sort of passion swirling around the stadium. If I don't wonder, I know there will be this weekend. And is that going to be the X factor? Is that going to be the difference between these two teams? Because they look pretty evenly matched.
Yeah, I think the crowd can play a part, but I'm expecting thousands of Irish to be in our stadium, so making a racket as well. So I don't think that's a be an end all of it. It's the crowd against, you were there against England,
yeah.
Last 20 minutes, it was magnificent, the atmosphere does lift the players probably, but of course they got concentrating on a job. That's factor. I think it comes down to ability plus keeping their heads and focusing on the job, because what Wales can't afford to do against Ireland is give silly penalties away, which allow Ireland to kick into the Welsh 22 and use their driving line out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's happened before with Wales in Ireland a couple of times in Dublin. Too many soft penalties. You know, they're going to have to be squeaky clean and make Ireland work their way towards the Wales 22, not the easy gimmies. So minds are going to have to be sharp and discipline is going to have to be spot on.
Okay. If all that happens, Wales get across the line, there's going to be some party and a lot of work for you to be done this weekend.
That's right. It's going to be absolutely manic. I can remember the 2005 Grand Slam, which was the first for 27 years. I've never seen anything like it in Cardiff then. You know, there were hundreds of thousands of people coming to the city. And I remember walking up, I think it was St. Mary's Street, at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And there was that much litter about from the people. You were almost, you know, it was over your ankles. It was just incredible scenes. And it was It was like a summer's night, actually. It was a balmy day. But of course, this weekend, perhaps something we need to touch on, is the weather forecast is not good. Will Ireland demand for the roof of the stadium to be open? I suspect they will.
Yep.
There is a Six Nations protocol. If the weather is too severe, the Six Nations can say the roof has got to be shut. That decision can be made up to 3 hours before kickoff. But I imagine the roof will be open for the game. I don't mind that mind myself. Mm. I'll be honest, but it will make it a definite arm wrestle.
I prior to the England game recently down there, I thought open the roof, it makes a big difference, lets the atmosphere out. But having experienced what we did that night, I'm beginning to think it doesn't make much difference anymore. When the crowd really want to make a noise, they make a noise and they make it count.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's only a small opening for the roof anyway. When it is open. So, and it's the type of stadium it holds the noise and the atmosphere. It's electric. You know, one of the best atmospheres I've ever heard at the Millennium Stadium was when it opened against South Africa in 1999. I think the crowd was 29,000 because of safety regulations. Stadium wasn't finished, but Wales beat them for the first time in history, and the atmosphere that day was incredible. So the atmosphere comes down to what's happening on the pitch, and we're expecting a huge confrontational match on Saturday, so it's bound to be electric.
Well, that South Africa game is 20 years ago. I would imagine that if Wales win this game at the weekend, we're going to be talking about this game and this championship for the next 20 years, certainly across the bridge where you are. Andy, enjoy the game at the weekend. Hope it goes well for the people of Wales, and we'll talk again soon.
Cheers.
Grace, how big a part does the Principality Stadium crowd have to play on Saturday? Can that be the difference, sweeping Wales to a 12th Grand Slam on the kind of wave of passion and emotion?
Oh, I think it is incredible, and it's proven to be that in the past. There have been times where the weight of expectation on the Wales team from the home crowd have been like a millstone, but I think those are more against Southern Hemisphere opposition, almost when they're trying to, those series of games against Australia where everybody in that stadium is willing them to win, but knowing in the back of their minds that they don't want history to repeat itself, and that gives it a slightly different dynamic. I think every time that Wales have had a home game to snatch a title or get them over the line, the dynamic's completely different, and it's very positive within the Six Nations. 2013 was just ridiculous, really, in the England going for a Grand Slam, and then Wales absolutely destroying them and getting enough points to win the championship as well. That was incredible, and that was a similar atmosphere in the Wales England fixture just gone, where,
yeah, for sure,
they're in the game all the time, but come those latter stages, it's an immense place, and they are just a sensational crowd.
Yeah, absolutely, and I certainly felt in Cardiff when England were there a few weeks ago that in that third quarter when it Wales just started to turn the screw, the door only needed to open just an inch and the crowd were through it and they were all over England. And you know, however much you try to shut out the white noise, there are certain occasions, certain arenas, environments where it is very difficult to do so.
Yeah, but do you know what, Spinky, I was thinking about this during the week and thinking about where Ireland have to go. What is Ireland's motivation to do better than beating the All Blacks at home, to do better than getting themselves to number two team in the world and potentially number one? And this is a standalone fixture. Forget about the championship, forget about whether England win or whatever else. This is a game where Wales are going for the absolute maximum. And it is a test that Ireland haven't had. In the context of going to a World Cup and trying to win it, this is the equivalent of a practice semi-final or final, because the atmosphere will just be something they've not encountered before. Mm-hmm. So if they're looking for motivation, that's where I'd be going.
I wonder what they're thinking across the Irish Sea, assuming, of course, that the whole of Ireland isn't at Cheltenham. Mick Scully, correspondent of the Irish Mirror, joins us. Mick, can you make a case for an Ireland win?
Yes, of course, Alex. Yeah, yeah. Um, Yeah, you could say the momentum's all Wales, couldn't you? I suppose on the back of 4 wins and 13 wins altogether in a row, which is a great record. But I think we finally saw last weekend that Ireland had their mojo back for the first time this year.
Yeah.
So they had a bit of momentum themselves. So we saw, I suppose, some of the big name players finally getting into their rhythm. Messrs Sexton and Murray in the halfback combination starting to click, and absolutely dominated the French, who were a shadow of the team that beat Scotland 2 weeks earlier. But even still, they had to be put away early. I think give a French team a bit of confidence, and you know, it's a different game, but they were put to the sword very, very quickly, and it was kind of impressive how error-free Ireland were compared to the previous 3 games. So in that regard, plenty of optimism, pretty full deck play. We still don't have Robbie Henshaw, and Rob Kearney's still a doubt, but in general in good health for this time of the championship. So there is good reason to be confident, to be honest. We might see Dan Levy play in the back row for the first time in the championship, and he could be just the man to take on the Welsh at the breakdown. Of course, that's where they're famed at the moment. They're superb back row themselves, the Welsh. The one thing, I guess, that is worrying people in Ireland is the way Wales defended against Scotland, and we kind of worry, do Ireland quite have the creativity to get through and around such an absolutely fantastic defence. I think that's the main worry.
Right. Okay. I mean, looking from afar at the Ireland performance, obviously I was in Dublin for the opening game when it looked like England knocked Ireland out of their stride, knocked them out of their rhythm. It looked as though against Scotland and Italy, they struggled to get their rhythm and their timing back in their game. But then the game against France at the weekend, particularly perhaps with Johnny Sexton's try, it looked as though they just got that timing back again. And for me, as a kind of dispassionate observer looking at that Ireland team, it has struck me all along that the timing is everything. If they can find that, then that gives them a decent chance, which is why I think that going to this game at the weekend, they really are a real and genuine threat to Wales.
Yeah, totally. And also, it's no coincidence that Gary Ringrose was back at centre, and he's become a real, really important cog and leader in the team. He's still quite young, but he's taken kind of control of the defensive aspect of the back line. But also, when he gets on the ball, he's like a Rolls Royce. He's fabulous. He just glides across the turf. And him and Sexton have a really good partnership relationship through Leinster. Mm-hmm. So you can see the difference there in the attack, which again is what we'll need, I think, on Saturday. But amazingly, that was Sexton's first try in 3.5 years, which is pretty astonishing. At test level, going back to the last World Cup. I think you can see noticeably he's staying out of trouble in terms of he's not putting himself out there to be hammered by opposing back rows, and perhaps Ireland are all the better for that. It's slightly keeping teams guessing, a bit of variety, because usually we see Johnny taking it right to the line, and that becomes a bit predictable, I suppose. So he's got a little bit more time and space, and also Ireland kind of reverted to more of a kicking game on Sunday, which maybe we saw England took them by surprise by playing that kind of a game. There was 3 or 4 really good kicks in behind the French defence from different kickers. So again, they're not relying solely on Johnny Sexton. Mm-hmm. So that they have had to vary their game. They have had to mix it up because they had become a little bit predictable, I suppose, after last year. Teams were working them out a bit. So good to see that variation. And even for Keith Earls' try, the last Ireland try, he began the move in the line-out, first man in the line-out, and peeled off the back and scored off a lovely reverse pass from CJ Stander. So, again, good to see that kind of variation in their play.
Needing to see a performance still from Conor Murray, I think, if they are to beat one of the big teams, which you have to consider Wales to be now, he needs to be firing as well this weekend, does he not?
Yeah, I think he's slowly coming back to where he was. It's taken probably a lot longer than people have thought. We were actually speaking to him today at the Ireland camp, and he's in good spirits, quite defiant. Feels like there's only small things really that need to be fixed, and I think we'll see him back to near his best now on Saturday.
Okay.
These are the kind of big games these guys relish. So I think we'll see more of his old self.
What is the mood in Ireland going into this game? Is there an expectation that Ireland are in quite a comfortable position and that nobody really fancies them, and yet they feel like they're playing well again? Do you think that the mood in the country is that people expect them to go to Cardiff and get a result?
I don't think there's expectation as such, because they haven't won there under Joe Schmidt. The last time they've won there was in Declan Kidney's last year in charge in 2013. And so it's been a very tough place for Cardiff, for Ireland, in recent times, all the time, I guess. But more so under Schmidt. He's actually only won there once, and that was a World Cup warm-up game. So there's a bit of emotion, I suppose, on the Welsh side. You've got Gatland's last game, Sean Edwards' last game in the Six Nations. And on Ireland's side, you've Rory Best, his last as a player in the Six Nations, and Joe Schmidt, of course, his last as a manager in this competition. So plenty of emotion on both sides, I suppose, that they can play on and use. But I wouldn't say expectation. I also think the fact that Scotland haven't won in Twickenham in 35 years or so, you know, people aren't really expecting that Ireland are going to walk away with the title this weekend. The damage was done on the first weekend at home against England. So what they want to see is another performance in line with what we saw last week, just to keep the progression going. A win would be a huge boost. I think last competitive game, obviously going into the World Cup, win would be huge in that regard. I think more than anything, a performance on the lines we saw, I think that would satisfy most people.
And final question, hand on heart, Mick, would a number of people in Ireland take an Ireland defeat if it means that England don't win the title, or have we moved on from that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a fierce rivalry between Ireland and Wales as well. So you got to take there's no love lost there either. That's a good question. I think we'd prefer to see Italy win, and leave it at that. No,
I think your hesitation answers for you very eloquently.
Yeah, I better bite my tongue on that one. I think England and Wales have been the best teams in the tournament. You know, they've been the consistent teams. So you can't take away from either of them. I don't think people here would do that, but I mean I think, like everybody else, we'd like to see an exciting final day. I suppose Ireland would be nicely set up if Ireland beat Wales, and then England and maybe Scotland pull it up to England and see what happens then. There'd be a bit more pressure on then and see how England deal with that, but they have been kind of the class act, I think, England of the whole tournament.
Yeah, but as a final thought, the if Ireland get a good performance to finish a championship and a win, it will put you back Not perhaps where you were at the turn of the year when you'd had that all-conquering 2018, but it'll put you back in pretty good shape going into the summer and the warm-up games going into the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. And it mightn't have been, and then in hindsight, you might kind of look back and go, well, mightn't have been a bad thing to have a little blip at the start of the year. Just a little bit of a rude awakening after, I think, a lot of people had their head in the clouds thinking about the World Cup already and how far we were going to break through that quarter-final glass window that Ireland have never got through. So when the England result happened, the performance and the result happened, that kind of gave everyone a little reality check that they're not going to get anything easy, you know. So yeah, if they win in Cardiff, I think that you could see the momentum would be there then, and they can certainly roll into the summer of warm-up games with the old confidence back, I think.
Mick, thanks very much indeed for your time.
Thanks, Alex. Cheers.
Grace, you wouldn't say Mick was bullish about Ireland's prospects, which is perhaps fair enough, seeing that they've only won once in the Principality in Cardiff since 2009. History sometimes does come into play in these championship fixtures, doesn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah, Six Nations likes a 10-year span between wins. It's a number that seems to come up quite a lot, and I'm always wary that when the Irish are talking themselves down and talking you up, beware. Because they've not played as underdogs for a long time, but they've made a fair amount of their rugby history from being on the back foot. So I would be wary of them. I back them to perform. Whether it's enough, I don't know. But I think they'll produce their best performance of the championship by some considerable distance.
Okay, if they do that, if they get the win, then it will be over to Twickenham to see what will happen in the final fixture of the championship, England against Scotland. Scotland haven't won at Twickenham since 1983, which is a quite remarkable statistic, really. Last time they were there, 2017, they were caned 61-21. But of course, last year at Murrayfield, Scotland won the game. They turned it all around. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? You don't give Scotland any chance based on history, but they won the last game in the fixture.
Yeah, they did, and it's only when you sort of cut and paste that England team and put it against the one that they've got at the moment. They were an England team unsure of their playing identity. They'd missed a trick in terms of preparation. They've got some selection issues, maybe one or two players coming towards the end of their international careers, and Eddie Jones's extended honeymoon period was coming to a an ever more obvious end. I think the transformation in the team over the autumn and through the Six Nations, despite the loss in Wales, England are in a vastly different place than they were in Murrayfield a year ago. And from England's motivational point of view, if they get everything right at Twickenham, they put themselves in a position to win the championship. And despite a couple of injuries, they've got players, particularly Manu Tuilagi, Billy Vunipola, players who they've not had consistently fit. And I think England just have too much for Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, you add in Joe Cocconosiga, certainly the performance he put in last week. Who knows whether he'll play this week? But when you can call upon that sort of power from your squad. And the emergence of Elliot Daly, who looks ever more assured at fullback after a slow start. And you're right, England do look fairly formidable. And if you look at the stats, Grace, at this stage of the tournament with one round to play, England has scored 19 tries. Ireland with 13 are the second most potent. And in defence, England have conceded 7. Only Wales with 6 have conceded fewer. So both going forward and in defence, England are in pretty good shape.
Yeah, they are, and it's very difficult to draw any sort of firm conclusions from the game against Italy, because pretty much England had it their own way from the off. They came out with a little bit too much swagger for the first 5 or 6 minutes, as demonstrated by Kyle Sinclair looking to put in a cheeky little attacking kick, which was. Probably showed mentally where they were. Then they tightened themselves up and utterly destroyed Italy. No huge black cross against Italy's name. They were just absolutely outgunned by a team better prepared, more physically able, and with better playing resources. So it was a good training run for England. It'll be a sterner test against Scotland, but England have got a number of positions in which they've got the luxury of picking different combinations. Who's to say that they won't just go back to Tuilagi and Slade in the midfield, bring Mark Wilson back into the back row? They could bring Ben Moon back at loosehead or stick with Ellis Genge, but they've got plenty of places to go. Scotland, with the injuries that they've got and the fact that playing resources aren't deep, are still patching up holes, albeit I saw a team picked for Scotland earlier in the week which just had 15 Hamish Watsons in it. Which is the dream team. Crikey, that boy's got a bit of bounce about him. But I just, and also I don't think that's, I can't see Scotland changing the way that they play. and I don't think that helps them when they're not, when they haven't got their best 23. I think they're going to have to find some different ways to play the game, because you can't rely on somebody who's not Finn Russell to try and run the game or play the game like he does. You need a little bit more. You probably need a little bit more structure, or a little bit more savvy about when you apply pressure to the opposition, which I don't think Scotland has done at all in this campaign.
If England needed any sort of boost, any sort of further lift this week, they've got it with Manu Tuilagi re-signing with Leicester, which means he's going to be eligible to play for England beyond the World Cup, which is fantastic. Let's get the thoughts of that from Neil Squires, correspondent of The Express. Squiresy, Tuilagi is a big catch for England going forward.
I think it's massively significant, actually. You just see the difference in England's side with Manu back in it and firing almost back to where he was before. You see the confidence that it breeds around him. You know, it was evident from the start in that first game in Ireland, that first carry from the long line out throw. It just set the tone for the rest of that game, really. And I think first of all, it's a great show of loyalty by Manu, because he could have got more money in France, more guaranteed money. And I think it's a sort of a thank you, you know, a debt of gratitude to Leicester there for how they've stuck with him through his dark times. But in England terms, I think it's just massive. If he can stay fit, he completes the jigsaw almost.
I'm not suggesting that England necessarily need an added shot of confidence to beat Scotland at Twickenham at the weekend, because history says that Scotland don't know how to win at Twickenham. At 1983, it's an awful long time.
Well, I know. I mean, so the people, I'm up in Scotland at the moment, checking in on Gregor Townsend and the boys here, and you know, people are talking about last season and Scotland's great win at Murrayfield, but I think more instructive would be to look back to their last visit to Twickenham, 61-21 to England. That was a thrashing. It was men against boys that day, and the Scots are so riven by injuries that I think they will travel south with some degree of trepidation.
So if we assume, or it sounds like you're assuming, that England will win that game, that means it all comes down to the game which is ironically played before theirs, Wales against Ireland. Wales unbeaten, Ireland going for to try to prevent them winning the Grand Slam. Do you give Ireland a chance in that game? How do you see that one panning out?
Yeah, I think Ireland will be a stubborn rock that will take some shifting for Wales. It could be a really grisly encounter, gain line fight. But I think Wales will find a way. I think, you know, there's so much on it for them, and they're so confident, you know, with this run behind them, that even though Ireland picked up significantly in the last game, I think Wales will at home will just have too much for a good Ireland side.
Okay, I'm going to let you go and get your haggis and your neats and tatties. But before you go, just one word on Italy against France. It's hardly top of the sporting agenda this weekend, but nonetheless, it's a fixture which needs to be played. How do you see that one panning out?
0-0 draw. I mean, Italy do have a chance, but I think, you know, man for man, France are the stronger side, even if they're a pretty disastrous collective all in all. I'll go for France, but not by much.
Squazzy, thank you for your time.
All the best, Alex.
Cheers. Grace, that Italy-France game, which is the third part of the triumvirate this weekend, is hardly a clash of the titans, is it? Two teams who have grossly underperformed in this championship. And I wonder whether that brings into sharp focus the debate about promotion and relegation. I've heard it being talked about on various airwaves, and I just wonder where you stand with this, whether we stay with the history and work out that everything runs in cycles, and why France might not be strong today, in a couple of years' time they may be Grand Slam champions, or is it time to bring in promotion relegation?
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because historically it was the Five Nations until you bring Italy in, and then you change it, and then you give them 20 years to try and find their feet, 20 years on. there's no change, and you could argue that Italy were more competitive when they arrived than they are at the moment. Some of that's to do with the nature of the game and the fact that with the way the laws are at the moment and the way the game is interpreted, it does make it harder, I think, for the underdogs, because the game is pretty clean. It's pretty violent in its application of the physics of each player. So the bigger, faster, more skillful teams clearly are going to come out on top more often, but I see less opportunity perhaps for upsets, which why sometimes it doesn't look great for Italy. The motivation for other teams underneath to try and raise their game or get investment and grow players and grow domestic competitions and send their best players overseas will only come given a window into a future that's different to the one that they're in at the moment. Georgia as an example. So I think the carrot of getting to the top table for a period of time is what will attract investment. And is interested, I'm not convinced by the World League or Nations, I can't even remember what it's called now. The Conor O'Shea's response to that, tell us what the rules are and we'll play, shows a confidence in his side. I don't know what effect it would have on Italian rugby if they went into a playoff and lost and were cast out for a period of time. So it's its pluses and its minuses. I'm pro competition. I think that if teams are good enough, then they need to earn the right to be involved in something else. I can't genuinely see France ever being in trouble, or one of the other nations ever being in trouble of being relegated out of the Six Nations. I genuinely can't. It would be there will always be a bottom team, just because when will Italy be ever good enough to finish third? Mm. I can't see it, not in the next rugby generation. Same with Georgia. So it's always going to be one of those bouncing up and down. And that begs the question, how do you produce a country who are strong enough to match with a well-historied, you know, 125-year-old game that is a second or third in a nation's culture? It's tough. But yes, on the surface of it, not just because of the way this Six Nations has gone, but I think added competition for that bottom spot would bring an extra element to the tournament.
It's probably worth bearing in mind that when France entered the championship in 1910, they had to wait until 1959 to win the title outright for the first time. So there is a history of teams coming in, albeit only France, but teams coming in and taking a while to kind of get comfortable in the championship. But there we go. We're in a different world now, aren't we? We want things quickly, and we want things to be more competitive, and there are a lot of competing interests. And so I guess there is a big decision. Personally, I would love to see Italy find their feet. As you said, Grace, before they entered the championship, they were fantastic. They were hammering on the door for years, beating particularly the Celtic nations fairly regularly and not getting a look in. It's cruel on them that their moment hasn't coincided with them having their best players, but there we go, we shall see. Anyway, to the final weekend of the Guinness Six Nations. Grace, brought to us by Gilbert, in association with Gilbert. Always appreciate your time, mate. Thank you for that. Enjoy the final weekend, and we'll wrap it all up next week.
Pleasure, mate. Cheers.